call the meeting to order. Welcome. Before we start the agenda, two things. I really didn't try to ignore Keith Larson at the last meeting. I just figured it was very bad karma if we say goodbye to him before our newest member, Rex Stimley. So I'm going to welcome Rex and thank Keith Larson. Okay, now we'll start. I assume everyone's read, reviewed the minutes from the last meeting.
Any acceptance?
Okay. Do you have a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, John.
One committee action to report. Yesterday, the Private Equity Committee met and approved a $150 million commitment to Aecon Equity Partners 4.
Slight change in the agenda on behalf of our Big Fund 5. We have Andre Collin as president, as well as Nick Peters, senior managing director and head of investor relations. John Grayton, unfortunately, had to go back home after a family situation occurred yesterday. So, continuing is Andre, who was here 3 years ago, actually, for a very similar reason.
Distress or inefficiencies in the commercial real estate market worldwide, especially in Europe. We reduced the size because there was no clarity for us as to where the flow would come, when it would come. We knew it was there, it was big. We just didn't know what would be the trigger, and a lot of it was with the European banks or in the European system. But there was no real pressure to get it out, so we didn't think that there would be a lot of flow during the investment period that we considered. That's why we reduced the size of the fund. We were wrong. There was a bit more flow than we anticipated, some of it very large transactions that we've done. To this day, we've deployed or committed 71% of the capital that we raised last year. We have a huge pipeline, several transactions that we're involved with, large transactions, which I'll describe a bit later, are in the second stage of the process, which means that we'll have to put a firm bid within the next few months. Most of these are in Europe. Of the money that we've deployed to date in Fund 4, it's about half-half between the United States and Europe, very little in Japan. And there's one big transaction in America, which was the public company that we privatized. But other than that, it's basically what we plan, which is Europe. And the rest of the money, all the pipeline that we have right now, is basically in Europe. So I expect that Fund 4 will look pretty much as we projected, which is dominated by Europe. And as I move to Fund 5, basically the same thing there. We think that Europe will be 60 to 80% of the fund. The United States might be 20 to 30%, and I'll cover a bit the markets. And Asia, probably 10%-ish. And we've been looking and involved in South America, looking at many things in the past 2 years. We have not committed any money at this point. There's a crisis there. It's something that Lone Star is underwriting. We'll pay attention to the same thing in Asia Pacific. But in terms of this fund, during the investment period, I doubt that there will be a lot of money in those markets in South America and Asia Pacific under ex-Japan. In terms of Europe, again, as I said, Fund 5 will be dominated by Europe as expected. And again, we have more clarity now in terms of the flow. There are some triggers, and a lot of the files that we're involved right now comes from the bad banks that are created by the governments that are now selling these assets. And there's about 230 billion euros of assets still held by the bad banks. In fact, Germany today, just today, announced that they're creating their bad banks as well. So they're going to start transferring assets from banks that are struggling to the bad banks, and these bad banks will liquidate these loans, mostly loans, in terms of what the banks have. So we're starting to see the flow. NAMA, which was with Ireland, was one of the biggest sellers, still is. We have four files right now from them. But there's a lot of other bad banks that are starting to sell their assets, and we expect this to be to give us a good flow of business. So Europe will be the big part of this fund. The other triggers, as I'm sure you're familiar, all the banks in Europe, most of the big banks in Europe have restructured. They put new management. Clearly, by the profile of the new management of these banks, these are consolidators. They will shrink the balance sheet. We've experienced this in America. So I expect that other than the bad banks, the banks themselves will start to get rid of their bad loans. And the reported numbers as of December 31st in the bad banks, in the bank's balance sheet is $1.2 trillion of non-performing or self-performing loans. So it's pretty substantial. And, you know, we, sort of, I'll cover a bit later, we're well organized in Europe to seize this opportunity. In terms of America, again, America is in good shape. Commercial real estate is in good shape. But you've seen lately that values have probably peaked up. They're higher than they were in 2007. You're starting to see the impact of values that have gone up too fast. There's another thing in America is a lot of CMBS that expires during the investment period, the next 3 years. There's about call it, 250 billion of these CMBS that are expiring. A lot of these CMBS were issued pre-Lehman crisis, late pre-Lehman crisis, so that means that these are products that are in outside the main markets, outside the main products, and will face some struggle in terms of renewing their loans. In fact, 13% of the loans that are issued from 2005 to 2007 in the CMBS market are in special servicing with the servicers. That means that they have a potential event, credit event there. So that's substantial. We think that this will come in probably late 16, maybe 17, but that will create opportunity. And the other thing is we did in Fund 4 and a bit in Fund 3, we've been focusing on the REITs selling the non-core asset, namely suburban markets. We like these assets. These assets are usually not taken care of. We've done that successfully, both in Fund 3 and Fund 4, and we think we're going to keep doing some of that. But again, I insist, I think the main pipeline will come from Europe, as we think now that the gates will get open for in terms of the non-performing debt and maybe some equity deals down in Europe as well. Again, I touched briefly about Asia. You're familiar with Fund 4. The only difference in Fund 4 and Fund 5 is we have widened the definition of Asia to include Asia-Pacific. There is a situation in Asia with China, with the commodity. We've been involved. We have an office now in Hong Kong. We're about to open an office in Singapore. We're getting prepared. We've seen this dynamic before. I doubt it'll be significant for Fund 5, but there'll definitely be something for Fund 6 and the funds after. There's a lot of distress. The reported distress in China right now is over $1 trillion, and that's the reported numbers. So there's significant amount of situation that will come that Rich Lone Star is comfortable doing. Again, our focus for the moment is mainly outside China and the countries that will suffer around China from what's happening in China and in the commodity sector. Still in Japan, we're active in the outside the main market, which is basically Tokyo. We're outside this market buying portfolios of asset quality assets that sellers, mostly some public companies that again want to clean up their balance sheets, sell these assets. We take them and lease them up and sell them. So we're active in Japan, but I think the future of our involvement in Asia will come mostly from outside Japan, probably outside China as well. In terms of South America, as I briefly touched, we've been there for the past 2 years, and most markets down there. We're looking at things. This is typical Lone Star. When we see that the market is struggling, we start looking at it, see, but wait till it's the right opportunity for us. There are some transactions that we looked at. As it is typical in a market that is in a crisis, the bid-ask is not right. We're going to wait till there's a bid-ask that meets our requirement, and there's obviously a seller for it. But again, same thing here. I don't think Fund 5 will have much in South America, but it's definitely something that I think in the future Fund Monster will be active. In terms of our strategy, nothing's changed. I mean, we're almost a single strategy manager. We have our same MO that we use all the time. So we aim at very large transaction. We're able to execute fast. We have, because of you, the benefit of the line of credit, which allows us to go and commit capital without financing, which gives us a huge edge to steal process. Because if you go see a seller and you tell him, I can close in 30 days, I don't need financing. That gives you a huge edge, and you'll get out bridge the price gap. We don't fear the complex deals. Two deals that we got involved in Fund 4, both public deals, owned properties, and Quintain. These were complex situations where We were able to unlock value for the shareholders. I think it was a great deal for the shareholders. I think it's a great deal for our limited partner. But there was some complexity in these deals that made it attractive for Lone Star. We could execute on that. So these are the types of situations that we like to look for. We're realistic. A lot of the bids that we're seeing right now are multiple countries. The very large one that we're in the second round of the process is over 5 billion euros, 17 countries, 13,000 assets. The fact that we could go and price this and execute on this give us an edge, and we're one of three in the second round of that process. So we don't choose the asset, and that makes you very competitive, very attractive for the potential seller. We use our size, which is important for us. The fact that we could commit large sums of money allows us to, I'll use the expression, steal the process. There's some deals we go and say, sell it, we could execute very quickly. Here's our price. If you like it, we could do it. And then there's a stop process. It allows us to do quick close. And also, one of the things we've been successful at is able, when we need financing of a large transaction, to secure financing from major banks ahead of the bid process. So basically, they work exclusively with us, so it gives us a big edge when it comes down to this. In terms of the key to success, for those of you that have been with us for many years, nothing different again. Probably our biggest tool is Hudson Advisor, which is our captive asset manager. As you are familiar, Hudson only works for Lone Star and is only directed by Lone Star. There's, call it, 900 employees there, and clearly our edge in terms of the execution. Our database, all the information, all the deal that we underwrite, whether we buy it or not, that information is in our system. It's not shared with anybody else. It gives us a big edge when we price the next portfolio.
Can I ask a question on that? You described Hudson as a captive organization. Are you saying there is no way that John Bracken and other leadership in Hudson could collectively decide to take Hudson and separate it?
Absolutely not. No.
They could not.
Could not. And Lone Star, I mean, there's been, in fact, I'd have to check legally. I don't think we can. But you should know that I am responsible for Hudson, even though I don't own Hudson. There's only one owner of Hudson, John Bracken. I am responsible for Hudson.
Right, but if he is the owner, what legally prevents him from taking Hudson and going his own direction?
Not sure about the legal aspect, the operational aspect of it.
I don't care about the operation. Yeah. I care about what prevents John Bracken from taking the gang and leaving.
Well, I guess he could legally, yes.
Thank you.
So back to Hudson. Again, one of the things is the experience that Hudson has. And especially since Fund 5 that you're considering will be mainly in Europe, I think we're probably unique in Europe in terms of the organization. We have about 400 people. Probably definitely the biggest in terms of the organization, the operation. And we are in multiple countries, which in Europe, it's not one market, it's multiple markets, different cultures, so we need to have that. We have teams in most countries that we're invested with.
Andrea, I'd like to ask a question about Hudson. So, my microphone's not on. I guess I should turn it on. Can you tell us a little bit more about what it does? So, they all report to you, so you're responsible for the operations. Can you talk a little bit more about what they do and how they're compensated, just so that we can all understand
what that means? Sure. Hudson does the other. So, Lone Star originates the transaction, does the preliminary underwriting, qualifies the deal. If the deal is qualified, then we start engaging Hudson in the file. So Hudson will do the detail underwriting all through the different stages of the process. If we are awarded the transaction, they will organize the closing and do all the work to take on the assets. And if once we close, they will perform all the asset management functions under the supervision of Lone Star, direction of Lone Star. So they will They are the asset managers, and they will organize the disposition. In terms of their remuneration, there's a fee structure that is charged to the deal. This fee structure is an appendix to the partnership document that all of our partners look at. There's two aspects to it. There's a cost-plus aspect, the lower of the cost-plus aspect, or the market fees, which is reviewed by the limited partners.
So at a high level, deal sourcing and capital provision happens at Lone Star, and execution and management happens at Hudson.
Exactly.
Okay. So trying to understand that relationship, so some of the partners at Lone Star participate in the carry, but Mr. Brickin is the sole owner of Hudson.
Yeah. So, take me, I'm not the owner of Hudson, but I'm a participant in Lone Star. I'm hiring Hudson, so I'm as aligned as with you as I can, because it's a cost for me as it is for you. Because they're a service provider, like a third party would.
Right, and the vast majority of the employees of the consolidated enterprise are in Hudson, not in Lone Star, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And one other question about operations outside of the United States. Do you hedge your positions if you're operating in all these different economies? How do you cover currency risk in these deals?
We're 100% hedge on the capital in the country. And as we get close to the resolution, we hedge the profit as well.
So do you hedge it, or do you have a...
We have a Treasury department that does that. We do our own hedges.
Where's the Treasury department?
Dallas.
Is it a part of Hudson or
part of Hudson? It's Hudson. And the past 2 years, because of volatility in the market, we've hedged 95% of projected profits. Mm-hmm. So we're very hedged, both from currency level and interest rate level.
So your treasury desk is buying swaps of several different sorts.
Yes.
And how are the swaps funded? Are they funded through the Lone Star proceeds, or do you have some other source of capital for...
They would be funded through the Lone Star proceeds.
Okay.
Inside the fund.
I just pointed out that obviously any of these Hudson services provided for the fund, were they not provided by Hudson, Lone Star would need to outsource that. And find it elsewhere in the market, which is what private equity firms without the benefit of the Hudson operations to work with need to do.
So it sounds like you have to pay for it at some point. Do you learn something? Is there something gained by having the operating business proximate to the principal business? Is there some advantage to having this arrangement?
Absolutely, because you get all the intelligence coming from the two organizations work together. So as Hudson works out the deal, all this information is fed back to Lone Star, which allows Lone Star to have a feel where the market is as they analyze different transactions, even source opportunity through what they see from what the Hudson side is. If you would use a third party, the third party would share that information with your competitor, and you know, everybody would have the same information. The fact that we have the intel coming from the operation of Hudson gives us a huge edge in terms of our ability to price and source deals.
So when you say you're opening an office in Singapore, do you mean that Hudson is opening an office or Lone
Star? No, it's Lone Star. The way we typically do is Lone Star goes, starts to look at different opportunity once Lone Star sees that there's an opportunity at the beginning, because we don't have Hudson resources. It's the Hudson of America that goes and does the underwriting and the asset management. Gradually, if there's enough volume, Hudson America will hire and train people in the local market, and gradually Hudson America will pull out. So we have two main poles of training, pole I call Europe and America, and depending on the situation, we send these lots of people to do. It's been the history of Lone Star since day one. So just to conclude again, other than the Hudson, the key to success is Lone Star has been disciplined buyer, discipline, seller. Again, we there's a great alignment between the general partner and the limited partners, as you are probably read in the document, even that fund, between John Drayton himself, the general partner, and the senior Hudson official, which we call UTCO. There's going to be more than 7% of the capital that will come from these groups. So we're very aligned in terms of our buying, and we're very aligned in terms of the selling. And you know, our philosophy is always, if we have a good opportunity to sell, let's get out off the asset. We usually, what we call a same market player, we price based on today's market condition, do what we have to do, which is usually fix the capital structure of the situation, and dispose, technically if we've done our work right, we can dispose immediately the asset, which we will. So, discipline buying, discipline selling. Again, I've made that point a lot. Execution is key for us. Sellers know us. They know that we never retrade. We give the price. We get a timing. We will execute that price at timing. That buys us a little edge from time to time. Not a big, but a little edge. And again, the point that I made between Lone Star and Hudson, our information, where we've been involved on most large transactions that you've seen in the past 20 years, and so we have that information in our system that gives us a huge edge when it comes to price and go for the next deal. So, Nick, unless you want to highlight something else, this is basically the general point I wanted to bring the board this morning.
The only thing I'd add is that Andre mentions interest alignment. Specifically, out of that 7%, John Brayton will be putting $250 million of his own money into this fund, which I think is obviously meaningful enough for him.
I have a separate question. So we've been hearing that the bank holdings in Europe will at some point have to sell. We've been hearing that for 3 years. What's changed?
If you look at most of the banks, they've been putting new CEOs, and these CEOs are accountants, and I am an accountant, by the way. You know what accountants do for a living? Cut costs, shrink balance sheet.
I was going to say, confuse me. Shrink and balance sheets, that's what they do?
Yeah, that's what accountants do.
So you think the change in leadership is an indication of a final...
Basel III kicking in. It's there. You have the ECB now controlling the banks. The pressures are there. The economy in Europe is not going well until you start cleaning up. Banks cannot really originate new loans. It's very tough to borrow in Europe. Most of our deals, if not all, except for CS, they're financed by American banks in Europe. So unless the bank starts to clean up, they won't be able to issue new loans. And they go through that stage. We've seen this here in America. We've seen this in Japan. At some point in time, the bank starts to clean up so they can start fresh. Now we feel that that's the trigger. And again, I see it in
the
flow.
The trigger is the change in executive leadership?
No, it's reacting to the pressure coming from Basel and all the regulation brought the changes. And you look at who the board's put, and it's very aligned to what they're going to be facing, which is the regulatory pressure to clean up their balance sheets.
I think the regulatory changes became more impactful once the ECB became the single supervisory board for the European economy. At that point,
what year was that?
2015.
Plus you have the EQR test, which was the test of the capital of the bank. So there was valuation of assets that was in 2014. So all these events have now occurred. There's clarity now as to what the banks need to do. Now is the trigger, and we actually feel it's going to happen.
And if it doesn't, where does all the gunpowder go?
Well, you still have the bad banks. Keep in mind that the bad banks still in Europe have about $230 billion of assets. I'm sorry, euros of assets. And the five largest deals that were in the second phase are from bad banks right now. Now, these banks are created, so Usually you take a bank, it transfer assets to the bad bank, and that bad bank is a resolution. That's the bank tries to sell the asset one-off or in a bundle. The one situation that we're in the second round in the Netherlands, it's 100% of the bad banks. So the Minister of Finance there decided to sell the whole bad bank, 5.2 billion euros.
The bank or the asset pool?
Yeah, well, actually, we call bad banks, it's just a pool of assets.
Okay.
So they're selling the whole company.
I would say it tends to dry powder. We obviously raised Landstar State Fund 4 a year ago with the intention of that being a three-year investment period. And in our minds, we try and ensure that we don't raise more than we could comfortably invest over a two-and-a-half-year period. The pace of that commitment, with the exception of one very large transaction in the U.S., has been as a result of the very real transaction volume that we've been seeing out of Europe. So I don't think at this point we feel that we are waiting, hopefully, for the European banking system to open. We feel that in the last 12 months we've seen a large number of very real transactions that have closed into Real Estate Fund 4. I believe there's evidence of that in the transactions that we've done on the behalf so far in Real Estate Fund 4. It's really a case of us expecting to see that continue, and if anything, to ramp up in scale. As we see the further formation of these bad banks, the example Andre gave this morning of Germany announcing this morning is $25 billion bank is another example of this.
And again, the big difference between this year and last year. Last year, we knew about all these assets. We just did not have clarity as to, is it going to happen? Now we do have clarity because it's supported by six or seven of these transactions that we're involved right now that are on the market. It's public, and you know, we're involved on all of these transactions. Whereas last year, when you were there, we didn't know what would be the trigger. We had no confidence that the banks would, but all these events that I described have happened since, and now there's more clarity.
Question. In the U.S., is there sufficient volume in the oil patch to be of interest to you?
We are looking at it. Again, typical Lone Star, we have a case, we have a thesis, we're looking at. We haven't seen yet the transaction to support that. I made the point before, we're a disciplined buyer. We know we have our own view of things. If the prices get to where we think we should be active, we will. But we haven't seen. And it's, I would also say it's early cycle. Usually the price gap between seller and buyer is too big, and at some point in time it narrows, and then we'll be active. But again, we're committing our own capital with you. We have zero interest in buying something that will go down, right? So right now we haven't seen this, but we're there. We have a team that focuses on this here and elsewhere, all the commodities and everything. We have a thesis. We'll wait and see if that's going to come our way.
But just to add to that, I would say that we are, to be clear, don't consider ourselves to be commodity traders. And so I don't take a view on the commodity price itself, but rather look at situations where commodities have had an impact on that's underlying collateral values in real estate, etc.
Right.
Rather than relying on some recovery of commodity prices in order to provide us with our exit, that would not be our plan.
Any other questions?
Thank you very much, and for your support. Appreciate it.
Rather enormous, so they fully allocated that fund already. And so
back in the market. So this one will have a preponderance of yen, expected preponderance of European debt. Some of the headwinds and challenges that we've noted in the Lone Star strategy and the platform, some of the financing leverage, there's a number of key person risks and whatnot, are well documented for years. We're well to discuss those. And then I kind of look at this as a, given the long-term accretive returns that Lone Star has provided over multiple market cycles in nearly 20 years, with Oregon's really the largest single factor for determining if there's a move forward on the recommendation scale. So, you know, there's a number of others that I'm going to walk through as well. From portfolio fit, this is our second largest partnership at about 9% of the portfolio. It's sliced rather enormously based on deal volume, and they do have very short duration investment themes. So if anyone might get a lot of cash flows moving through our system. On an unfunded basis, they represent about 30% of our portfolio commitments remaining at $630 million. The mitigant to that, and one of our portfolio fit thoughts, is that this is the only opportunistic investment team we'll be looking at this year. As part of the cycle, we're actually a little more focused on moving towards core, longer duration assets, so I don't plan to be moving up in our portfolio allocations to opportunistic real estate themes. And the recommendation is a $300 million to Lone Star Real Estate Fund 5, and that's in order to achieve the underlying economics on the fee base and 10% prep. And with that, we're willing to walk through any of the discussion points. And I should note, I brought up Austin Carmichael here as well, who's had a number of years underwriting both with predecessor firms, with Nori and PCA team besides us, and then also did the bulk of the number crunching over the last 3 months here with this investment opportunity.
Tony, for those of us who are new, could you introduce your fellow panelists?
Oh, absolutely. Sorry about that. So I've got Christy Fields, partner with Pension Consulting Alliance, PCA, and Dylan Lorda. Christy's right here in Portland, and Dylan has just recently moved to New York City. And then next to me is Austin Carmichael, real estate investment officer. He's been with us 2 years now. That was the easy one, thank you.
They're 7.5% co-investment. How does that compare to others in this field?
From a dollar size, it's actually quite large, given that most real estate funds are $1 billion and under. There's not a lot of, if you make a funds that are out there, don't have the same dollar commitment. It's hard for us to determine exactly where that fits on each individual's profit and loss, and their P&L or general ledger, but it would be large from a dollar standpoint. At 7.5%, that's sizable, but that's a myriad of John Gracken bulk of the dollar amounts in there, and then a smaller co-invest piece from the Hudson Principles and Lone Star.